Okay, here we are, Friday. Let's go over to Ireland and say hello to Father Paul Kramer and find out what's new in his life. There's so much going on right now in terms of the 1.3 billion Roman Catholics on the planet. The Catholic Church is in grave difficulty at the top level. I'm sure the mid and lower levels are probably holding together okay. And I'm wondering how much has trickled down of the overthrow of the Vatican, which I don't think I'm being excessive by using that terminology. Hello, Father Kramer. Welcome back.
Hello, Jeff. And when you speak of the overthrow of the Vatican, that has taken place. That took place just over 10 years ago.
Yeah.
The definitive overthrow.
I concur, and I'm not a Catholic, as I've said. So what's happened since we've last talked? Anything new? What's going on with the mid-level in the church and certainly the rank and file in the church? Are they beginning to see the light about what's been done to their church?
More and more bishops and priests are speaking out against this Bergoglio character.
Yeah.
Bergoglio himself, I remember, it was in a German publication that reported it, where he said that he may cause a schism in the church. And as things are turning out, the schism is almost completed now. It is, in fact, a reality. It's just that it is not perceived as such. It's like a building that's been eaten up by termites, but if you look at the facade, it seems to be strong, but it's going to collapse in a heap very quickly because it's been all eaten up by termites. And
and the termites could otherwise be described as what? That's funny.
Well, they could be described as, we could call them... Tucho's brothers?
Tucho's thugs. All right, that works. That's funny. Tucho Hernandez may be the next pope. I'm still thinking that's a strong possibility. We'll see.
Tucho Fernandez, yeah.
He's the perfect thug to put in there. Come on, younger person. He's going to be around for a long time. He's obviously very good at intrigues. I don't know the man, but he looks like he's playing his role perfectly. He's just waiting for Bergoglio to check out.
Yeah, there would be. One would expect there would be a conclave after that, but conclaves can be manipulated, as we know from past history.
Yes. All right, so what's happened since we last talked? Anything new in particular that we need to mention?
Well, they're carrying on the session, this final major session of the it's the final session of this so-called synod on synodality.
Got it.
But Bergoglio is a slippery character, I have to say. He's a shrewd, slippery character. Unlike Vatican II, Vatican II Council ended in 1965, closing address given by Paul VI. That's the end of the council. And now, after the council's over, the commissions will implement the decisions of the council. That's how they did it in the 1960s. But Bergoglio, he has a different scheme. He says that once this synod is over, it's not really over. It's going to continue. Although there are no more sessions, this is the last session. There's going to be some kind of a document at the end of this session. And it might say nothing about nothing, or it may say something far more ominous than might be evident on the surface. We don't know.
No, we don't.
They do say they want to conclude this session with some significant progress, some right. significant step to be taken.
Right.
They don't suggest what that might be. At the same time, they are emphasizing that there will not be anything controversial coming out of this session of the Synod. This is the slipperiness coming out of from this slippery character, Bergoglio. To make it appear like nothing to alarm the Catholic faithful. No big deal. It's just a synod, like there's been so many synods and councils in the past. That's all we're doing. Just making a few reforms here and there, making the church a better place than it was before. This is the impression they're trying to create, but it's not really what they're doing.
Right.
Bergoglio always talks about the peripheries as if. The real power in the church, the real source of divine truth in the church, is from the bottom up. Whereas, just look at either an Old or New Testament of the Bible, and revealed truth comes from the top down. Moses had to go up to the top of the mountain to receive the law from God.
Right.
And Jesus Christ announcing the perfection of the law, the fulfillment of the law. He gave the Sermon on the Mount. So the revealed truth is taught first by God to those that he has chosen to be his spokesman on earth. In these divinely appointed witnesses to divine revelation, they are the ones who, the prophets and the apostles, who demonstrated the divine authority that was given to their word, as Jesus Christ himself said, he said to them, you will work greater signs and wonders than I have. Not greater in magnitude, but greater in number, definitely, in geographical extension all over the world. And that has been the case down through the centuries. So Bergoglio has inverted the whole idea. Where does revelation come from? Where does power in the church come from? It comes from the lowest level. It comes from the lowest level, from the peripheries, from the grassroots level. It filters up to the top. It goes through the from down below. It goes through the hierarchy, and then the Pope is just the president for them. Their idea of the papacy is the Pope is just the president. He's just the executive branch, and all he does he rubber stamps what the church below him has already decided, and that's their idea. That's their idea of papacy, and that's why Tutor Fernandez came out with that document some months ago, explaining that the primacy, the papal primacy, is something that has to be exercised synodally. And the thing about that is, if one were to hypothetically admit that primacy must be exercised synodally, then it's not the primacy anymore. Because the primacy in the Catholic Church, the primacy of the Pope in the Catholic Church is defined by the First Vatican Council as a total fullness of supreme power, a full and supreme jurisdiction. And that is why Pope Pius XII, issuing his legislation on the election of a pope, formulated the doctrine on the primacy of the pope as an absolute jurisdiction. over the whole planet. So over the entire, to use the Greek term, oikoumene, over the entire inhabited world where you have the Catholic Church, wherever the Catholic Church exists in the world, wherever the Catholic Church exists in the inhabited world, the Pope has a total fullness, the absolute jurisdiction over that entire church. That is the dogma of the Catholic faith. Bergoglio can't change it. It is, again, it is defined by the First Vatican Council that when the Pope defines dogma ex cathedra, he cannot invent any new doctrine. He cannot change doctrine. He cannot invent doctrine. He can only clarify. That's to give definitive expression to what the Church has always professed. So the faith of the Church that has existed since the time of the apostles, that is what Vatican I defines, that the, when the Pope speaks infallibly, all he can do is clarify with the help of the Holy Ghost, the Holy Spirit, with God's help, he has the grace to not be in error when he clarifies what is that apostolic tradition, that divine revelation that was given to the Church by the apostles, by Christ through the apostles.
Got it.
That's all the Pope can do. The Pope cannot reform dogma. The Pope cannot say, "Well, the Church."
Well, theoretically, he can't, right? Theoretically.
Theoretically, he can. Well, already, I mean, Bergoglio is already saying that
he's acting like he's acting like a dictator in many ways, not outrageously, but he's shaping things according to what he's being told or instructed to do. The guy is not okay. You go ahead. You're the expert. I'm just looking at it from my perspective. He doesn't seem to be following the rules much at all, unless he wants to.
Bergoglio is changing the morality and changing the doctrine of the Church.
The whole thing, right?
In other words, Bergoglio is attempting to correct Jesus Christ, the apostles, Moses, and the prophets, and just correct all of them. Basically, saying they all had it wrong. They all had it wrong.
Well, this is crazy. This is nuts for him to even try that. Who's pulling his strings? Now, there are dark and murky shadows always in the background, and Fernandez is one of the most illuminated of those dark shadows and power players. But where's the direction that Bergoglio is following coming from? Can you narrow that down?
This is the interesting thing, and this is what makes this faux pontificate different than the true valid pontificates of the popes that preceded him.
Right. All of them, or most all of them, yeah.
All of them. You had Pope John Paul II. This is a good example. Pope John Paul II, he understood what was the message of Fatima, what was the request of Our Lady of Fatima for the consecration of Russia. But Freemasonry was not going to allow for such a thing. So Pope John Paul II would make a compromise and make the consecration of the world, and try just including Russia in a general way. The problem with that is he understood that was falling short. He even said in his prayer before the statue of Our Lady of Fatima, he spoke about those people that who are still awaiting our act of consecration. In other words, they're still waiting for the Pope to consecrate Russia to the Immaculate Heart of Mary. So he even acknowledged it. Now, the late Father Gabriele Amort, he was present at the time. He was there.
Okay.
Very, very close. Very, very close to the Pope. And he said, Pope John Paul turned toward Cardinal Sodano and he said, "Can I mention Russia?" And Sodano said, "No." Under the reign of John Paul II, these cardinals, those cardinals like Sodano, they were under the power of people like Cardinal Casaroli and Cardinal Sudestrini. Now, Malachy Martin often spoke about ecclesiastical Freemasonry and his book, Windswept House, describes what in actual reality was happening in the Vatican in those days. And the names are changed. Casaroli's name was changed to be fictional, to be Mastroianni or something like that. Right. And Silvestrini's name was changed to, I don't remember what the fictional name for Silvestrini was. These men belonged to ecclesiastical masonry, Silvestrini and Casaroli. And when I was talking to the late Monsignor Mario Marini, he was the secretary of the Sacred Congregation for Divine Worship at the time of his death in 2009. I knew him for more than 30 years. I knew him from 1974 until he died in the year 2009. He was one of my very close. He was one of my very closest friends.
Right.
And one time he told me, in the church hierarchy, Casaroli is the Secretary of State. He has a higher position of power than Silvestrini. But he said, in ecclesiastical masonry, Silvestrini is the boss over Casaroli. That was the power of Silvestrini. And another thing Marini pointed out to me, when he showed me the photograph of Silvestrini, he says, look at his eyes.
Mm-hmm.
Can't you see? The man is completely insane. Just look at his eyes. And I'm thinking, what kind of madness is this? Well, it's the kind of madness that comes about through demonic possession.
Right. Which is quite real out there. You're talking to someone who, I've seen it very clearly in people. Just take them over, change them. Yeah.
And that's why you had popes like John Paul II and Benedict XVI. They both made the same complaint. In different words, they both basically said that their power, they're inside the papal apartment. They say, my power ends at that door.
Hmm.
That outside in the halls of the Vatican, there's another force that rules, and that's Freemasonry. And they tie the Pope's hands. But then John Paul II died, then Benedict XVI died. And when before Benedict XVI died, he was overthrown.
He was overthrown.
And he was replaced with a man who directly is not a pope having his hands tied by Freemasonry. He is a Freemason. And he takes his orders when they see fit. They will dictate to him what he must do. He's not... He's under Masonic obedience.
The order. Got it.
Yes. No, I can't mention names because I'm talking about someone.
That's fine. That's fine. This is very helpful.
Someone who is still alive.
Mm-hmm.
A very high position in the church revealed this matter. So I really have to protect the...
Of course. Yes.
There's a very high-ranking source.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But that is the difference between the Bergoglian false pontificate and the popes that preceded him. The others had their hands tied by Freemasonry, whereas Bergoglio has tied his own. He's allowed himself to be handcuffed by his Masonic superiors.
Sounds like he put his hands right up there. So go ahead, put the cuffs on. I'll do whatever you want. It's not a good situation. When did the other power of Freemasonry take dominant control of and in the Vatican? Approximately. Was this a long process, or was it kind of a convulsion, and all of a sudden the Freemasons are running the show?
They really gained the upper hand. I mean, they were always there. At the end of the 19th century, you had this Cardinal Rampolla, who was of the Ordo Templi Orientis, one of the worst offshoots of Freemasonry. He was found out, the papers were found eventually after his death, that showing that he was in fact a member of this really virulently godless satanic Masonic cult. Now, and that's how Pope Saint Pius X was elected, because the in the name of the emperor, of the Austrian emperor, or they call it Austro-Hungarian Empire back already by then, the cardinal of, I forgot which city, might have been the Archbishop of possibly Warsaw, I can't remember, not Warsaw, Krakow, or, but one of the Polish cities, I believe, in the Austrian Empire, he pronounced a veto against Rampolla being elected pope. And because the emperor was given that privilege of vetoing the election of a cardinal to become pope, that was the last time that veto was ever allowed. And it prevented Rampolla from being elected pope. And the great pope, St. Pius X, was elected in his place. And Pius X, of course, was a tremendous adversary of Freemasonry and of the New World Order.
When was he in his position there? When was he Pope Pius X?
That would be, I think, from 1903 until 1914, when he died, 1914, at the just after the outbreak of the First World War.
Right.
So that's how long this is how long Freemasonry has been trying to gain possession of the Vatican. But
they infiltrated
during the time of Pius X. Pius X really cleaned house, and he threw them out, and he
like the money changers.
That's right. When Leo the 13th was getting old, he was, I think he was over 90 when he finally died, and he tried to run the Vatican a little bit too much single-handedly at his age, and he wasn't up to the task. And Pius X just cleaned house, and Masonry was dealt a blow. Then it took time for them to regroup, regain their power, their infiltration. They were infiltrating under during the time of Pope Pius XII.
How strong in the Freemasonic movement and power matrix that we're talking about are or is international Zionism? The two are hand in hand in many and most cases that I can see from my perspective. Are we seeing Zionism involved with the Masonic overthrow of the Catholic Church? It would make perfect sense to me, because Zionism has been after global domination and control for hundreds of years, if not thousands. Who the hell knows? Long time. So, go ahead.
John the 23rd, of course, was a young protege of Cardinal Rampolla, and he was very much infected with the Masonic way of thinking. Whether he actually was a Mason or not is disputed, but there is evidence, some produce evidence indicating that he was himself a Mason. Whether he was or not, or whether he abjured Masonry, but whether he became a Mason and left Masonry, whether he ever was a Mason or not, I won't even try to answer that question. But some have answered that he was, and they have cited some testimony. After he died, Paul VI, Giovanni Battista Montini became Pope. Now, the interesting thing about Montini becoming Pope was, as happened in 1958, there are reports, and I believe even the FBI had the report on this, that at the conclave of 1958, Cardinal Siri had been elected, and he had taken the name Gregory the 17th. And there was between the liberal cardinals and the conservative cardinals, there broke out a fight between them, an actual wrestling match, because the liberals tried to prevent them from putting the white smoke up through the chimney of the Sistine Chapel.
This is true. This is very interesting.
And the report,
talk about internecine warfare. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah,
this is good.
I have researched the matter, and the best I can come up with is that Siri finally said, "If you don't want me, elect someone else." Yeah. So they elected Roncalli, and that was engineered. That election was engineered. That was planned in advance, because there was a conversation between I'm trying to remember the name of the first. It was a woman, Australian, I think, Rosemary. What was her name? I forgot her last name.
Engineered elections. You're sounding like you're talking about American politics, right?
Yes, but she. There was she had a secretary, a Frau Gerstner, a German lady,
right?
A younger lady, Frau Gerstner, and Rosemary, whatever her name was, escapes me at the moment. Who was the head of this catechetical institute created by Pope Pius XII? Well, Pope Pius XII was mortally ill; he was dying, and Frau Gerstner said to her, "What's going to happen to our church after Pope Pius dies?" And Rosemary said to her, "Oh, haven't you heard? After Pope Pius dies, Roncalli is going to be elected, and then Montini after him." They had it all planned. In 1963, lightning struck again, and it was Prince. Let me think of his name, a German name, a cousin of an Italian prince who was involved in setting up the conclave. And the report was given, was made, was related, that during that conclave that elected Paul VI, Cardinal Siri had been elected again, the second time. But this time, there was one of the cardinals, and some have pointed the finger at Cardinal Eugene Tisserand. Other reports don't name who the cardinal was, who broke the seal of the of the conclave went through the doors and met with either on the phone or met in the hallway with representatives of the B'nai B'rith Association.
Oh. And then, well.
Then he went back in. He went back into the conclave. This already invalidates the conclave. He went back into the conclave. And he said that if Siri is elected, there will be immediately unleashed a violent persecution of the church in Eastern Europe.
So, approximately what year is this?
This was 1963.
Okay.
And
B'nai B'rith in there. Wow. Why am I not surprised? That's what I'm talking about, Zionism, getting involved with this whole Freemasonic influence. I mean, it's hard to separate the two. I don't think you really can. They're part and parcel of the same mindset. That's what it seems like. This is very interesting. Direct hands-on involvement with B'nai B'rith. All right. Wow.
So Cardinal Siri reluctantly declined becoming pope after that because this second time around he did not even take a papal name. I'm not sure he even accepted it yet, but he had won the election to become pope, and immediately the uproar just immediately erupted. And I think even before he could say I accept or not accept, he declined the election.
What was the B'nai B'rith's involvement in all this? How can you quantify that for us?
Well, look what happened.
I don't want to get you in trouble here. I'm just curious. So answer as well as you can without creating a firestorm.
Let's just look at what happened afterward.
Fair enough.
Giovanni Battista Montini was elected instead of Siri, took the name Paul VI. If you look at the cemetery plots of the Montini family, you see Masonic and Jewish symbols on the tombs. Giovanni Battista Montini was of Jewish ancestry on both sides, his mother's and father's sides of the family.
All right. He's a Jew. Okay.
And under Montini, that is when Freemasonry basically took over the Vatican. A man by the name of Cardinal Jean Villot. A double L in French is usually not pronounced as an L, but
it's
that
like
family
a Y.
Name, yeah, but that family name in that family, they did pronounce the L. So, because I hear people talk about Cardinal Villot, but actually that family referred to their own surname as Villot.
Interesting, all right?
And there was a high-ranking French officer of military intelligence who grew up as a child near the Villot family. And he said when he was growing up as a child, he and his siblings, they were forbidden to play with the children of the Villot family because the Villots were notorious Freemasons.
All right, well, you've just made mention of one pope, and I suspect there are a lot more, who was inarguably, unequivocally Jewish. You got father, you got mother who are Jews, you're a Jew. Simple. So you got a Jewish pope one time that we know about. And I would be interested in it just off the cuff if you happen to know of any others. The penetration of anything of power now or influence or great concern by these people is almost a given. They get into everything. The same people. They've been at it for, 2,000 years? Whatever. Long time.
There were now, these two are more, the...
Go ahead.
There was Wojtyła, John Paul II, and there was Ratzinger, and they were of the Jewish bloodlines on their mother's side.
Well, that makes them Jewish. All right. That's quite remarkable. But it's not a surprise if one understands, and I'm never speaking for Father Kramer, I'm speaking for myself when I talk. It never ceases to amaze me how the Jewish people, 0.02% of the world population, get into almost everything of power and influence. They just go there. It's like they're magnetized. And they influence and they control. And you can call it Freemasonry. That's fine. Whatever you want to call it. Doesn't matter. It's the same mindset. And then we have the issue of Jews with a biblical DNA ancestry. All right? They're biblical Jews. They go right back to the time of Christ and before. And then you have the Ashkenazi faction, which adopted Judaism in the 600s, as in 600 A.D., and when the Ashkenazi Empire was dissolved, destroyed, defeated, whatever, they took their Judaism with them, their adopted Jewish religious faith with them, and moved into Europe. So that's, you've got two different kinds of Jews out there, and that's difficult for a lot of people to understand. But so we know of three popes that really have a definite Jewish lineage. All right, that's not a surprise, but it's interesting to hear. And what about Bergoglio? Is he? What's his ethnicity, so to speak? Argentinian, I know, but
Bergoglio,
Masonic in there somewhere. Well, they've got to have some connect. They're controlling him, so he's got to be involved with them.
There are Jews with the surname Bergoglio. So, for whatever it's worth.
All right, enough said. So the door's open. Okay. We don't know. This is all really fascinating, and it's never talked about. So we're in debt to Father Kramer for even going into this area of discussion, conversation. Facts are facts, you know? It's just the way it is.
I don't know the percentage of Ashkenazi who are descendants of the Khazar tribe.
I don't know either. But the Khazarians didn't all just vanish from the face of the earth. They took their Judaism and went places. Eastern Europe, primarily, in the beginning. That's why they're light-skinned. They got blue eyes. They're not Mid-Eastern. They're not Arabic-looking. And if you remember that genetic study some years ago of Palestinians, and we'll call them biblical Jews, just for the sake of conversation here, they did a DNA analysis of both of them, and they were so virtually identical, the story disappeared from the news literally one day after it was posted. There's no difference between Jews and Palestinians. They're the same genetically. The DNA is the same. Well, that didn't go over well with certain groups, and that story went away real fast. Just FYI, everybody. Okay.
Yeah, well, the DNA tells interesting stories. Like the Ashkenazi Jews and the Sephardic Jews are very closely related, and they both have very similar genetic makeup. Their mixture, their mixture with the European races. There is no Jewish Semitic race like there would be 2,000 years ago.
Understood. That's the whole point of this. That's correct. You're absolutely on.
Now, the Sephardic Jews and Ashkenazi Jews, many of them do have the original Semitic DNA mixed in with a lot of European.
Mm-hmm. Well, when I see Netanyahu start ranting and railing about anti-Semitism, it's kind of funny. I honestly kind of chuckle at it. He's very conveniently kind of reinventing history. Whatever. It's just, Very clever people.
They're, unfortunately, the leaders, the Israeli leaders have outsmarted themselves because they are leading their own country, Israel, to ruin.
I don't see any way out for them without suffering major and severe, at the least, injuries. They've really messed things up. This is not going to have a good ending for them.
And they're going to drag the world down with them.
That's what they do. Father Kramer, for I can't tell you how many years I've been saying this, that the people in control, and I think everybody knows who is generally in control, will take the whole thing down with them rather than yield that control. They will not be replaced by any other power center. They will take everything down. I agree. Look at the Samson option. Right now, if Israel is in trouble and it's going to be destroyed, the Samson option will be invoked. That's the nuking of all major Western capitals in Europe, etc., and elsewhere. They've got hundreds of nuclear warheads. Go ahead. What?
You took the words from my mouth. I was just going to say the Samson option when you said it.
Yeah. Yep. Well, that's the name of the game. And unless, and I know our listeners here, this is the most wonderful audience, I think, on any talk radio platform anywhere. They know, they understand the Samson option very clearly. Seymour Hersh, I believe, was the one who revealed that. But anyhow, this situation is not going to get better, friends. It's going to get much worse before it does get better, if it ever does. And I'm not sure it will. They've gone too far. They have obviously, again, I'm speaking for myself, used the Samson option or the nuclear threat behind closed doors all over the place. That's why the Arab nations are so stoic, and they're in a static situation now. They're not doing much. They're doing something, but they're not sending their armies toward Israel. Let's put it that way. They're using technology and weapon systems, but they've been told if you really get in the way and cause trouble, they know what's going to happen. They'll get nuked. You got a country with 400 or 500 nuclear warheads at weapons, at least, maybe more. We don't know. Everything from suitcase size on up to intercontinental ballistic missile size. They got it all. And that's what I think they're counting on is their trump card. No pun intended.
Unfortunately, against this threefold power, Freemasonry, Zionism, and the British crown.
Right. The bloodline.
The strongest force in the world to counterbalance that force was the papacy. And the papacy has been overthrown.
Very sad to hear you state that again. And we know it's true, and it is sad. That was kind of the last major obstacle, in a way.
They've taken over the very highest position. They have taken over the fortress, as is foretold in the Book of Lamentations. That has been fulfilled in our time. And now, this is why I always emphasize so much the message of Fatima, the secret of Fatima.
Mm-hmm.
Cardinal Ratzinger, before he became Pope Benedict, he read the third secret, and he said, "What's in that secret is in sacred scripture." It's in the Bible, in other words. It's in sacred mm-hmm. scripture. And it has been repeated again and again in many other Marian apparitions. So we have a very good idea. Maybe not word for word the text of the third secret, but from those mm-hmm. who have spoken it, and I've talked about this in the past on this program.
Yeah, yeah.
We know point by point what is in the third secret. Even if we don't know the verbatim text, we know
Understood.
We know what's in there. The overthrow of the Catholic Church, to be more accurate, the overthrow of the administrative apparatus of the Catholic Church in Rome.
Nicely said. Yeah.
That has taken place. They are the setting up of a counterfeit church that will attempt to exterminate the Catholic Church and replace the Catholic Church. That is happening now, and that's what this synod sets out to do. And that's why the slippery character Bergoglio says there's going to be nothing really controversial at the end of this session, because they have what they call the study groups. That this is the the time for making proposals and studying. And after the session is over, early next year, and for a few months until up until about June, the so-called study groups are, and that's an Orwellian term if there ever was. What these study groups are, in fact, is what during the French Revolution, the Reign of Terror, what were called the directories. It's a perfect equivalence. These directories that are euphemistically named study groups, they're going to draw up the documents that will be turned into decrees that will be rubber stamped by Bergoglio. It's all been decided decades in advance how they want to overthrow, how they intend to overthrow the church and create a counterfeit church. They've been at it for a long time. And they gained control of the Vatican during the reign of Pope Paul VI, and they have never relinquished that power. And now they have total power because their man is the Pope of the false church, the counterfeit church, the synodal church. And again, he's not a Catholic Pope. He's not a true Pope. He's an anti-Pope. But from their perspective, the synodal church has its own pope. It has a different kind of papacy than the Catholic Church, as I've described already. And they are going to basically abolish the Catholic faith, the Catholic sacraments. They're creating a pseudo-Christian nature-worshipping church, an environmentalistic church that couldn't care less about the extermination of the human race, because they have this ludicrous idea that the universe and the planet are like living beings. The world has a soul. The world is an organism, a living organism.
New age, all new age stuff, and they're just slinging it around. New age stuff, that's what it is. Been around. By the way, if I might, for people who don't know what synod is, S-Y-N-O-D, look it up, but if you want, I'll just give you the quick definition of it. A synod is an assembly of ecclesiastics or other church delegates convened, pursuant to the law of the church for the discussion and decision of ecclesiastical affairs, an ecclesiastical council, as it were. So that's how they're doing it. They're having this synodal mentality. They get together, and it's like if the Congress in this country began to change the Constitution and completely reverse it or whatever. That's the same idea of what's going on through the Synod over there. Go ahead.
And they chose to do a Synod because, according to Catholic Church doctrine and law, a council is under the absolute primacy of the Pope, whereas they're trying to get rid of the papacy entirely. So it's got to be a more democratized power from below. So it's a Synod. Secondly, because in the synodal church, it's going to be what was warned against by the great Pope Pius X when he warned in his apostolic letter, Notre Charge Apostolique, he warned against the one world religion, the one world church that they're going to create. It's one world church that will establish an order in the world that will be neither Catholic, Protestant, nor Jewish. It will be oppressive. It will oppress all the working classes. But this one world church is going to be a babble of uniting all denominations and religions, uniting all religions in a one world religion.
Got it. We have to pause right there. Until next time, Father Kramer, thank you. It was a very, very well said, very articulate. Thank you for that. Take care, and we'll talk soon.
Bye now.
Okay. Father Paul Kramer, have a good weekend, everyone. The network will carry on, and we'll be back Monday. So plan and think. Talk soon. Take care.